Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema. Ben Solak is next to me in spirit and in microphone. Ben, this is it, man. We made it to the final episode of the 2019 guest mock draft. Are you going to miss it? Be honest.
This is the 16th intro you've done.
And no, so be you're honest, not.
I'm looking forward to at least a different intro.
I'm sure everybody else is. And everybody else is also probably super thankful that this is the last time that I'm going to list off all of the mock draft picks that we have had. But I got to do it, people. One last time, because we got two guests on this show.
Under 30 seconds. Let's do it.
Under 30 seconds? Okay. All right. Ready? Go.
I've got my watch.
Okay. Cardinals went Kyler Murray. 49ers went Nick Bosa. Jets, Josh Allen. Raiders, Quinnen Williams. Bucks, Ed Oliver. Giants, Dwayne Haskins. Jaguars, Jonah Williams. Lions, Montez Sweat. Bills, TJ Hawkinson. Broncos, Devin White. Bengals, Devin Bush. Packers, Brian Burns.
15 left.
Dolphins, Christian Wilkins. Falcons, Juwan Taylor. Redskins, Byron Murphy. Panthers, Cleland Farrell. Giants, DK Metcalf. Vikings, Jeffrey Simmons. I'm not going to get it.
Five.
Titans, went Eric McCoy. I only got through 20. Steelers, Greedy Williams. All right, I'm taking my time with these next ones. Seahawks went Jerry Tillery. Ravens went Paris Campbell. Texans, Andre Dillard. Raiders went DeAndre Baker, Eagles, Rashawn Gary, Colts, Chauncey Garner-Johnson, Raiders, Noah Fant, Chargers, Dalton Reisner. Last episode, we had the Chiefs going Nasir Adderley. The Packers with the giant surprise pick. If you haven't listened to that episode, you better, because Kelly really throws us a curveball, but actually, I kind of like it. Drew Lock for the Packers at number 30. That brings us to the Rams, the Super Bowl runner-up. And to help us out with the Rams, and to appreciate all of the handsomeness that is Sean McVay, we had to get an equally handsome individual. You know him from The Bachelorette, and he is also the lead draft analyst now from Pro Football Focus, Mr. Mike Renner. Mike, how you doing, man? Thanks for joining the podcast.
I'm doing fantastic. That was quite the intro. I did not,
you know,
not
Ben,
deserve all of that.
Listen, Ben is over here complaining about my intros, and I think I'm doing a pretty good job. So thanks for joining us, man. We really appreciate it. Oh, and dude, congrats on the lead draft gig over at Pro Football Focus. You guys, I got to admit, man, obviously we have a draft website and we attack things our own way, but the way y'all attack the draft and the things that you get to do are really unique. Just how do you guys go about covering the draft from a Pro Football Focus angle?
Yeah, so a lot of what we have is, you know, we have a lot of data and grades on all these players that sort of shape our evaluations. I think a lot of times we're just never going to be high on guys who don't grade well. You don't grade out well pretty much any position, which means, you know, in our world, if you weren't a productive college player, we see that as a large piece of the puzzle going forward. So we have those grades as kind of a basis. We obviously, you know, form our own opinions based on what we've seen work in the past, what we think is valuable at each position, kind of how the grade was accumulated. So like if you're an edge defender and you're just beating up on terrible tackles, and every time you face a good tackle, you disappear. Well, that's probably not good projecting you to the NFL where all you face is good tackle. So we go deep into that, and so that's basically the gist of it. And we have our draft guide that's out now that has all the advanced stats on, I think, 600 players in this draft class. So check that out if it's anything that interests you. If you're listening to this, it probably is something that interests you.
Yeah, I got a subscription, so I get the draft guide anyways. And let me tell you, the subscription is literally worth just to look at how beautiful this draft guide is, like, laid out. It's like that. I don't know who did the design for it, but super hats off to them. Before we get to some of the Ram stuff, I wanted to ask you, who are, you can literally name as many guys as you want. Just give me a couple of guys that come to mind who, when you have been going over this draft class, that you have really enjoyed watching. Some guys that you project to be pretty well at the next level, that you have a good feel for, that you're excited to see make that next step to the NFL, that you think are going to do well. Who are a couple of your – and you can name some obvious guys if you want, but who are a couple of guys that you really enjoyed watching this draft class?
I go back to Andy Isabella's tape a lot, and it's a lot of fun in terms of just like how fast he is and how much he wins down the field. So I watch a lot of his targets. He's definitely one of my favorites in this draft class. I like David Long's tape, the cornerback out of Michigan. He's just so, watching him play man coverage is a ton of fun. He's I like undersized corners that can play man coverage, that can that are physical the way he is. I mean, it's not great to project you to the NFL, but it's just the fact that he's not, you know, completely unafraid standing across from a guy who's 6'3", maybe 220, and just going to punch him right in the chest right off the snap is always fun to watch. Similarly, Jimmy Moreland, the James Madison corner, very similar in that regard in terms of he's just tiny. But
oh, Jimmy Moreland. Yeah, I
love Jimmy.
Yeah.
So those guys I like watching, yeah.
All right, there we go.
Disappointed there was no J.J. Arcega-Whiteside there, man. You're among friends. You're among Arcega-Whiteside allies.
This is true.
Okay, yeah, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside I love, too. I probably watched his all his box out plays, like, each, like, 10-plus times. They're awesome.
Yeah, we are big J.J. Arcega-Whiteside truthers.
Grown man. But, all right, let's shift the focus a little bit to the Rams. I want to know where PFF, or you specifically, whichever one you want to go to, falls on the Jared Goff conversation. Hard not to talk about the Rams without talking about Goff. And obviously, there was a solid pushback after Goff's weaker performance in the Super Bowl that, hey, listen, like, this guy really ain't that much, and you know, his success is so much reliant on McVay. And so I don't really want to ask, like, where the ceiling is for the Rams with Goff, because I still think the ceiling is clearly Super Bowl. Like, you know, they made it last year. They had a chance to win it. But how much is Goff adding to that team? Where does he kind of rank, I guess, among other quarterbacks in the league? Just what are we talking about when you know, you're drafted by the Rams? Are you dealing with a top 10 quarterback here? You're dealing with a guy who's more so the product of the system?
Yeah, at the moment, I'd put him in that sort of second tier, which is the Kirk Cousins, Matt Staffords of the world, where it's good. They'll have a game where you're like, oh, man, if you just could see that. Week after week after week. It's kind of ironic that Goff and Cousins had it that same week. Was it early on in the season last year on Thursday Night Football? They both just went back and forth. They're like, yeah, this is high-level quarterback play. They're making real throws, and they'll tease that every once in a while, but I don't think consistency is there. Goff, his disappearing acts are very concerning. That, to me, is the most concerning aspect about him and why, if I'm the Rams, I'm hesitant to. Like, all the conversation about just letting him walk after 5 years, you know, doing the quarterback because of McVay's system, I think is we saw how well Kirk Cousins did in the McVay system, and then when going away from it, how well Goff has done in it and any other system he's played in the NFL. So there is something to be said for that. So I think he is a good quarterback, though. I mean, anyone that is capable of those games, I think, is in that level, but just firmly in that second tier until I see more consistency out of him.
This team obviously had a lot of success last year under McVay, but where's the weaknesses? I guess, like, offense and defense, you can name a couple of positions if you know of some, but, like, even if there's some big names that are there guys that really need to step up even more? What are the make or break positions right now for the Los Angeles Rams outside of quarterback? Because you kind of just highlighted Jared Goff a little bit there, but yeah, I guess I'll switch the question to more of a, like, if the Rams are getting back to the Super Bowl, these positions played the way that they needed to for this roster, what would you say that they need to do well?
I think we need someone besides Aaron Donald. He draws so much attention from opposing offenses, just anyone along that defensive line. I mean, edge would help. Dante Fowler, I don't think, is it. Clay Matthews, obviously, at this point in his career. Just anyone. Dominican Sue was pretty valuable, but still not a great pass rusher for them a season ago. So just adding some talent along the defensive line would be great. Some talent at the linebacker position as well could go a long way. And then the media center. I mean, John Sullivan was pretty washed towards the end of last year. There's a reason he's gone now. So just someone to fill those shoes is necessary, especially with, you know, just how frequently they run the ball, how big that running game is to their success.
Do you think, Mike, do you think that these McVay, I don't want to say McVay cast-offs, that's a little bit too easy, but the pursuit of the next McVay in terms of Matt LaFleur in Green Bay, and obviously you have Cliff Kingsbury, who the Arizona Cardinals did note is friends with Sean McVay when they hired him. this desperation to find the young and energetic and free agent attractive quarterback, or excuse me, not quarterback, head coach. Do you think that this is going to bear fruit, or when you watch McVay, when you chart through the offenses and when you just kind of see what he is as a coach, obviously, you know, he just hired John Robinson, I believe, the PFF analyst, who now is with McVay, his quarterback's coach in Los Angeles. Interfacing with McVay, is he unique? Is he one of a kind? Or can his success be replicated by kind of boiling it down to those few items, those few distillations of his character?
Oh, I think they're just that offense has sound. It comes from, it's based on like sound football principles of, you know, match up numbers, like getting favorable numbers in your advantage, whether it's in the run game or the pass game, the way they set that up. I just think if you're not taking those concepts, you're not stealing concepts from that offense, I think you're doing it wrong. The, you know, what they do in terms of bunch formations, their zone running game, that sort of thing, how they utilize jet motion and jet sweeps a ton to give a lot of play, whether it's in the passing game or the running game. I think you're not stealing those concepts. So just by token, if you're one of the, you know, older guard of offense coordinators who are set in, you know, a West Coast offense, you're just not taking advantage of evolutions to the game that the disciples of McVay are. Now, I think play calling is still king in the NFL, knowing which play to dial up at the right moment, being able to set up plays the way that McVay can, the way that Kyle Shanahan does, I think is still what makes them unique, and why I don't think their disciples are necessarily, you know, going to just be godsends. But I do think that there is something to it. They're still better than, you know, your run of the mill offensive coordinator in the NFL.
So let's shift things a little bit more towards of a draft, and it'll kind of build off, you know, the question that I asked you earlier about the positions that they have of need, the ones that need to step up. But it's always tough predicting things here late in the first round because you just don't know what's going to happen in front of you with those first 30 picks. But can we project, I guess, maybe a couple of names that you could see, or even just a couple of positions that you could see the Rams really targeting here with this number 31 overall pick?
I think edge. I think it's just defensive line. It makes just too much sense in terms of the value that will be there.
Yeah.
I think pretty much everyone says there's 10 to 12 at least defensive linemen that have, you know, a first round type of defensive lineman. It's pretty much unanimous. This is a deep defensive line class. I even said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if half the first round ends up being defensive linemen. That's just how deep it is at the position. And so with that being said, I think it's not necessarily going to push down the class a ton, because I do think there is still some scarcity. You're still going to want to get your guy right off the bat, but it's still going to push down some guys a little with just how much talent there is. So not everyone's going to be able to draft defensive line, so we'll push some guys down. I think there will be a talented one there for them.
So then let's get a pick from you. You had talked about a couple of positions that they really needed. So who's it going to be with this board? Now I know I just got to apologize just for everybody that went before you. This is a rough board. We had some beat reporters come on and they picked some really talented guys. So there's not a lot left here at the end of the first round. But if you were picking at 31 for the Rams here in this guest mock, who would it be?
So I said, after saying that D line, I went and checked the, you know, the first 30 picks, and the one I just looked for one name, and it was Garrett Bradbury. And I saw he had been picked. Asked you guys today, they want to pick Garrett Bradbury.
There you go.
No, NC State center. I'm plugging that one in right away. I'm running that card in because of how good a fit that is. I think realistically, he probably will be off the board because of how talented he is in the running game. But NC State last year ran over 100 more snaps of outside zone than any other team in college football.
Wow.
The Los Angeles Rams last year ran over 50 more snaps of outside zone than any other team in the NFL. It was our third highest graded center in all of college football in the running game. I think just it's such an easy translation from that offense at NC State to the offense with that the Rams run. He could hit right off the bat. Like I said, John Sullivan was a weakness last year. He could be a vast upgrade at that position.
Yeah. Wow. Ben, what do you think? What do you think about the pick?
I mean, I love it because like it's the snuggest fit you're going to find in this draft class. It doesn't matter the prospect, doesn't matter the team. I mean, Bradbury to the Rams is a match made in heaven. And the big thing about that wide zone offense and that play action offense that McVay runs is it's going to protect Bradbury's anchor in pass protection. He's very rarely just going to have to short set, settle his feet, and take on power in a straight line. So much of that zone action will protect his anchor, allow him to slide protect. That's what he needs to the next level. It's perfect.
I like the fit too. I know D-line's a need, certainly edge, but I'm not so sure they're going to get the value that they're going to want here at 31. And so I think it's going to be a lot better if you're looking on that interior. Certainly, if, like Mike said, if Bradbury makes it this far, it's probably going to be an easy pick for him. So, Mike, we really appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us and getting us caught up on the Rams.
Hell, for sure. Thanks for having me, fellas.
Ben, we got one more pick to go. One more pick, and of course, it's the damn Patriots, isn't it?
Gross.
That reaction says it all, but we only got one more to go. We're excited about it. You guys stick around. All right, everybody, welcome back to the final segment of the 2019 guest mock draft series. It's been a lot of fun going over it. I'm not going to name the picks again. Y'all don't want to hear it. If you want to hear it again, if you get nostalgic, just go to the first part of the episode. Ben timed me. I tried to get through it in 30 seconds. I couldn't do it. Ben reminded me that I'm a failure. Whatever. Here we are at the end of the line. And of course, it's the New England Patriots, right, Ben? I mean, this is the life in the NFL. This is what we have to accept. The Patriots are always going to win. This is just the reality, is it not?
2 years ago, and I think they're picking 31, not 32. I can't remember what happened that year. It's weird that they were picking 31. Somebody else wasn't picking 32, which means somebody else must have won the Super Bowl.
You know, I can't remember it either. Since both of us can't remember, we might as well move on to what this year is. To help us pick for the Patriots this year, we have our good friend, Mark Schofield. He works for Inside the Pylon. Mark, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Gentlemen, it's a blast to be with you. And unfortunately, I have been in the mountains of Pennsylvania the past like 4 days. So I know full well who was picking at 32 a couple of drafts ago. I've been reminded of it every single day, including my first day here. We met a family with a young child just about to turn 3. They're from the Philadelphia area. They're huge Eagles and Flyers fans. Their young child's name, Carson. I kid you not.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mark, name it after Carson. Where are you at in Pennsylvania?
I'm in the Poconos.
Dude, that's where I grew up. I grew up in Strasburg.
Oh, really? Do you know Woodlock Lodge?
Yeah, you're 35 minutes away from my house.
I'll have to wave when I drive home later today.
Do it, man. By the way, yeah, it's a good area. It's a lot of fun.
Realize that this podcast was now a brochure for Go Visit Northern Pennsylvania.
It's now a Yelp podcast.
Yeah, basically. All right, so... Let's talk some Patriots. We'll get into I want to get into the Rob Gronkowski thing in a little bit, but certainly I want to get your overview of just what it's like being somebody who covers the Patriots, because dude, this is so rare. Like a dynasty like this will never ever happen again. Basically in any sport, the longevity the Patriots have had from the beginning of the Tom Brady era to now. But what is it like going into every year as a fan like that? Like, is it truly Super Bowl or bust? Like, is that literally that what you have to think as a Patriots fan every year? Because, you know, and I ask you that to set up this question. Take us to the beginning of last year. Did people, were people really thinking, yes, this team can win a Super Bowl, or yes, this team should win a Super Bowl? Then obviously how the year played out and how it went through the playoffs and how they were crowned champs at the end.
Yeah, Trevor, it's such an amazing run that they've put together. But this time last year, there was a lot of like unease about this team. They're coming off the Super Bowl loss. You know, Gronkowski had said after that Super Bowl loss to the Eagles, yes, Benjamin Solak's Eagles, that, you know, maybe I'm going to retire. Hello. And so there are a lot of trepidation about, you know, the state of that franchise. You have Edelman sort of coming off the injury and then the suspension as well. And so you wonder what they're going to do in terms of a passing game. And then when they make the two picks for Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel, you see an idea that, okay, those are the things that you do. Obviously, look, they lost Nate Solder, so you need a left tackle. But you draft a running back. That's a move towards the future in a sense. That's a move towards we're going to run the ball and be a different offense because we're a little bit perhaps worried about Tom Brady or transition into a rookie quarterback. And so there was this general sense of unease that, look, until this team starts winning games again, we're not too sure about where they're going to be. And let's not forget, this is a team that started with some bad losses early. They had a loss down in Jacksonville in that AFC Championship game rematch. They had a loss to Detroit, which kind of really took everybody by surprise. And they were headed into that game against Miami 1-2 with Miami at 3-0 with a chance to go down 3 games in the AFC East after week 4 of the season, which was kind of rare and unfamiliar territory. But like they always do, look, Belichick firmly believes that you know, you want to be playing your best football January into February. Like September, the games count, but you're just trying to get better. It's basically an extended preseason. And so for most corners of the Patriots fan base, there was concern, but yet, look, we've kind of been here. You know, they've had early season bumps along the way. They figure things out, and they'll figure it out down the stretch. You know, there were a couple of, you know, games down the end. That game against Buffalo where they won, but Brady didn't look himself. Gronkowski didn't look himself. And people, yes, myself included, wondered, can they go into a playoff game and throw the ball enough to win? And they did that in the AFC Championship game. And so for most years, I think it's at least AFC Championship game or bust. But still, in this day and age of NFL and parity and, you know, every team having a chance to reload during the draft, like we're going to talk about, AFC Championship game or bust is kind of rarefied air.
It's just so crazy. Yeah.
It's kind of rarefied air. It's just AFC Championship or bust. It's just top 14. That's all.
Yeah. You know, what's crazy, Ben, is that there are people right now, I kid you not, sort of in various corners, maybe the outside fringes of the Patriots fan base, wonder, look, we know what Belichick is going to do in this draft, that it's not going to work. And as great as a head coach he is, he's still not the player development guy. He's still not the general manager type that this team probably needs. And then you just wonder, like, what do these people need to be happy? Because you look around at how they address, you know, the offseason, right, including free agency, the way they find guys like a Kyle Van Noy, identify what these guys can do well, and plug them into roles. I mean, John Simon, he's out there making huge plays in the AFC Championship game. They got to bring him back. Like, not a lot of teams are banging on his door, but New England was. I mean, that's what they do. Their pro scouted department is probably among the best in the league at identifying roles for guys and seeing how they can plug into New England and what they do on both sides of the ball.
We just had this conversation with Kelly Price. We were talking about Green Bay. If you're on the internet long enough, you'll believe anything, right?
Oh, yeah.
Aaron Rodgers for the Packers. And it's, listen, Rodgers actually never been a good quarterback, not even once. You know, if you're on the internet long enough, you can talk yourself into some crazy theories. I do want to shift the focus to Gronkowski a little bit, because I want to know, you know, for as long as I can remember, right? Like, obviously Brady's been there, Belichick's been there forever, but like this Patriots offense has been able to run through its tight ends. It's had a dominant tight end at the position. Gronkowski, obviously, when Aaron Hernandez was there, he was adding to that. You have times where Martellus Bennett is getting involved as well. Now Gronkowski retires. He dents his Lombardi trophy on his way out. And you've got Austin Seferian Jenkins kind of as the biggest name there. Matt Lacoste is behind him. How does this offense need a tight end the way it seemed? Or has that just been a product of Gronk being there? And if they do need a tight end, are they willing to go at 32 for it? You know, kind of I think the general mindset is like you can draft tight ends late. You don't have to draft them early. So will Belichick zig where others zag, and will he go tight end early if he really feels like this offense does need one?
You know, it's a fascinating question, Ben. And I think that, you know, Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady and company, they're going to build the offense around the players that they have. And so if they miss out on some of the top tight ends, like, look, the board we're going to work from, the two Iowa guys are gone. And so if they miss out on one of the top tight ends, although I think there's a guy we'll talk about that could still fit in their system, fit very well, they might move to more of a lighter personnel package. And when, you know, you expect them to address tight end early, maybe they don't. You know, the thing with the tight end position, though, particularly in this offense, particularly with Tom Brady, is, you know, the routes that they ask the tight ends to run, seams and crossers, are a huge part of what they do schematically. And so I think they're still going to want to get a tight end, and they can identify a guy in this draft class that we can talk about that will do that, that can run those routes and be that sort of extra security blanket for Tom Brady, because Brady always wants to have two security blankets on a given route concept, one from the tight end and the other from Julian Edelman, you know, drive concept, you know, shallow cross concept, where you've got those guys work in the middle of the field, hoss wide juke, where you've got the seam and then that juke option route from Edelman over the middle of the field. That's the play they ran three times on the same drive against the Rams that culminated in Gronkowski's final catch. And so I think they're still going to want to address tight end. I don't think it's an absolute must. I don't think they have to force a pick at 32. Like, if the board falls this way, I'd be surprised if they went tight end. What wouldn't surprise me is if one of the Iowa guys falls, say, past maybe the Giants at 17, and the Seahawks are sitting there at 21. They want to get more picks. If the Patriots don't actually trade up to go get one of those guys. Now, if they'd be there, that's another story. But if they are available at 21, that's a potential trade to watch.
Yeah. No, That I could see that. I feel like the Patriots just aren't a team that like trades up a lot though. So
When they've done it, they've done it for defensive guys. They did it for Hightower. They did it for Chandler Jones. I mean, I'd be stunned, but it's like, you know, Ben teed it up, you know, zigging while everybody else zags.
Yeah.
You know, if a tight end falls, people don't expect Bell to trade up, but he might. And Seattle, I think, is a very willing trading partner at 21.
So, okay. The Patriots defense, you brought them up a little bit there. I don't really understand it because they basically take the most important position on defense, which is pass rush, and just like tell it to screw off all the time, and it somehow works out for them. So like, please help me out here because I don't understand this, because in the draft, I have my draft philosophies of what positions that are important, and yet here the Patriots are winning AFC championships, winning Super Bowls, and telling pass rushers that they don't need them. So like, how does the Patriots defense continue to do what they do? And then I guess going in, like, swing that a little bit into a draft need of, like, where they might be looking to improve on the way that they run their defense.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is schematic, Trevor. I mean, they do a lot with stunts and twists. You know, it's a situation where they, like, look at how they use Trey Flowers. They would involve him on a lot of tackle and end exchange stunts off the edge. They would use him in sort of their radar front where they would have him as the only down lineman, and they would put him head up on the weakest spot on the offensive line. Like their game against Minnesota, they put Trey Flowers head up on the center. Their game against the Chargers, they put him head up on the right guard, Michael Schofield. And then they have everybody else just sort of moving behind them in a two-point stance. You don't know who's coming or not. So they really rely on scheme. They haven't had sort of a dominant physical one-on-one guy that could win those matchups. Flowers could do some of it, but they weren't going to overpay him for a guy that could win one-on-one matchups some of the time. And so they're going to rely a lot on scheme. And in terms of this draft, I would be stunned if they went sort of edge at 32, if the board falls this way or if the board falls different ways. I mean, you could make a case for maybe a Winovich here, but I think they would wait till day two. A Charles Omenihu, a versatile guy that can play inside and outside, I think they'd like him. I think they'll love his length, but I still think they would look at that as, say, day two. And so with, you know, five, maybe more picks on day two, if they do the Belichick that had trade down, which they still might, you know, they'd probably address pass rush somewhere in those five picks that they have right now on day two and say, look, an Omenihu could be there. A Winovich would probably be there. You know, if you want to get really nutty, wait until day three, Jalen Ferguson. I still think they'd be scared off by his agilities. But if he's there, say, at like 97, you know, maybe they'd take a flyer on him. So edge is probably a day two pick for them. They'd probably at 32 go interior defensive line. If Dexter Lawrence is there, he'd probably do something like that rather than, you know, forcing a pick at edge.
So I look at a Patriots team now who's got, number one, a roster full of players that I don't think should be starters, but they are starters, and they're going to be fine. Kind of as we alluded to, it's just the annoying Patriot way. But also, we've got six picks in the first 101, right? So almost six top 100 picks. I can't imagine a team like the Patriots, which typically I don't think sees a lot of contribution from rookies. I'm not really sure what they do with six top 100 picks, Mark. So let me ask you, do you envision, we talked a little bit about trade-ups. Do you envision a lot of trade-ups? Do you envision moving some picks? You know, obviously we know about the pick player swap for the Patriots. Do you envision just straight up moving some picks for players, acquiring more veterans? And then, you know, not for nothing, they've got four seventh rounders. They have six picks after top 100. They have 12 overall picks. Do you think the Patriots make a lot of selections, more than like, you know, the 7-1 per round? Or do you think they're going to be oriented on dumping these picks for guys that they view more so as year one contributors?
I think they'll handle it a couple of different ways. I mean, first off, there's no way they make all 12 picks. Like, just don't bother. Like, if you're doing a mock draft, a final mock, maybe make 7 or 8 picks for New England at the most. I think they might.
You can't roster all of them.
No, you can't roster all of them. So it's basically sunk cost. And so they'll probably move a player or two for a team like, say, maybe Seattle, if they're looking to sort of, you know, move down. Maybe they would sort of get a player in addition to a future, you know, second rounder. They might sort of stockpile picks for next year because there is the looming Tom Brady question. You know, do you address quarterback this year or do you wait till next? And if you wait till next, you might want to have additional picks in next year's draft, that capital, to maybe go up and get somebody. And so they probably do something like that. They probably look to, you know, convert some of these future seventh rounders into maybe future sixth rounders. So I don't think they make all 12 picks. It's probably more of that 7 to 8 range, you know. So, again, if you're doing a final mock, don't mock all 12 picks in New England.
It's probably smart advice. I wish I would have heard that before you guys assigned me.
All you had to do was ask me. I would have told you Brett Rypien at some point in this draft and just forget the rest of it.
I wish somebody would have told our content director that before I did the Patriots 7-round mock and had to pick all 12, because that was a that was quite the chore there. It was difficult. It's like, how many needs can I give the Patriots team? It's like,
I got to tell you, Trev, the number of times I've drafted LJ Scott with that final 7th-round pick, I'm just tired of it at this point. Like, I liked it when he was a freshman, but come on.
Right, sure. Okay, so let's get into close to making your pick. I know that you were telling us before, what you want to do here at this pick in this guest mock draft is different than what you think Belichick is going to do. So let's first talk about what you think the team is actually going to do, and then tell me what you would do for this pick, and we'll get a pick for you here at 32.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Belichick move of all time is to trade down, and if the board falls this way, he might do that.
You already have 12 picks. Please, God, no. What?
He might look at it and say,
actually, you know what? You want one gently used Gerald McCoy? Because we'll trade, because Tampa will trade you 36 and
Trevor,
39 and Gerald McCoy for 32.
You can't offload that McCoy. Down.
I will write up the paperwork. It'll be in your office tomorrow.
Trev, I already turned that down in the like mock draft we did in the entire like Locked On Network. I was offered something just like that. I said, look, no, I'm okay. And then they tried to give me the other tight end, Cameron Brayton. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm okay.
So we're not whoever's been Gerald doing McCoy, that's been listening guys. To me, because I've been talking about bailing on both of them for a while now. Yeah, so that's funny. So,
no, I mean, Belichick might look at this and say, give me a second in early in the second, at a future second for next year, and I'll get out of this spot, because he might look at this and say the value just isn't there at 32. And there might be a team, if the board falls this way, say Washington, that might want to move up for a player that we'll probably have to talk about. It's kind of a big elephant in the room. So Belichick might do that. He might go defense. Like I said, interior defensive line. If Dexter Lawrence is there, that would be a Belichick move, I think. You put him a shade defensive tackle. I know you guys, you know, Ben wrote this. He's a guy that might be sort of a dying breed, sort of a true nose tackle. But Belichick has always valued that. And right. So he might look at a Dexter Lawrence and say, that makes a ton of sense for us. You pair him on the inside with Lawrence Guy. You can get that interior push at times. That's going to help whoever you get on day two and the rest of the edge rotation. So he'd be a consideration. Tight end is obviously a consideration. A lot of people, McShay, Kuiper, have said Irv Smith here. I think they pass on Irv Smith for who would be their tight end three, which is Jay Sternberger. He's probably their tight end three. You know, so like you wrote this, seam routes. How many times have we seen Gronkowski run seam routes? I mean, that's what this guy does. And so you could run Hosswide Juke. You could have him running up the seams. I think at 56, he might be the pick there. Offensive line, though, that might be the way Belichick goes. And so my thoughts are it's either Dexter Lawrence or Chris Lindstrom. They like this kid from BC. He's got some versatility to him. He's played on the inside. He's played on the outside. They're looking at Isaiah Wynn, technically a rookie because he didn't play last year, coming off an Achilles, being your left tackle. Like, that's a bit shaky when you consider you're protected Tom Brady. Now, I think Isaiah Wynn could still be a left tackle in this league and a good one, but you're going to want somebody behind him. So Lindstrom might give you a little bit of that swing ability. And if nothing else, you've lost Adrian Waddle, your swing tackle from last year. Lindstrom can do some of that, or you can move him to the inside as well. I do know they like him. Look, Cody Ford is available here. That's also a consideration. So if it were Belichick doing this, I think Lawrence, Lindstrom, or Ford would be the pick.
What about if it's you?
If it's me, it's Kelvin Harmon. Look, you need You need a wide receiver in this draft. You don't know what you're getting from Josh Gordon. Yes, they just signed Demaryius Thomas, but he's 32 coming off his second Achilles injury. You have some of your inside guys, your guys like Julian Edelman, your guys like Philip Dorsett, your guys like the guy that they just signed, Ellington, that can sort of work on the inside, do some of that option slot type stuff. You need more of that boundary guy, the guy that can be physical at the catch point, that can beat the press. Guys that do that aren't usually common coming out of college because you don't see a ton of press. That's Harmon. I think he's got a nice, you know, wide range and route tree to him, so he'd fit in what they do schematically. And again, if you don't know what you're getting from Josh Gordon, Kelvin Harmon makes a lot of sense. Harmon or A.J. Brown would be the ways I would go. I prefer Harmon to Brown, but I think both players make a ton of sense for New England. First-round wide receiver, though, for the Patriots would never happen, but I'm going to do it, Kelvin Harmon. Now, finally, look, Daniel Jones sitting there at 32.
All right, we're done with this podcast.
That's the big elephant in the room. Now.
Keep going.
I wouldn't do it. I've said this. I would grudgingly understand it because if there's a scheme and a situation that might make sense to him,
exactly.
It's a quick game offense. You know, Ben, you just did your contextualized quarterback in. You know, you could probably chime in on this as well. You know, the Patriots offense timed with a situation where he'd have to sit might be ideal for him. You know, if we're going to force him into the first round, better to do it at 32 in a situation where he could sit and learn from Tom Brady than at 6 or higher, which is going to make me drink more than I expect to on draft night. But it's a consideration if Jones is there at 32. I get asked this a lot. I think they consider it. I would grudgingly understand it, although I would much rather get, say, Brett Rypien at 204 than Daniel Jones at 32.
Talk about a young man who had 70% of his throws not go beyond 9 yards down the field, Trevor.
Yeah.
Dude, I was watching some, just kind of finishing up my overall thoughts on him on this week, and just everything was super easy for him. And then when he had to push it down the field, I didn't love it. So at that point, like, what am I drafting?
Because his best downfield accuracy and placement scores for me came between the hashes, came in the middle of the field. And so we're talking about seam routes a lot when it comes to the pages. We're talking about intermediate crossers. So that's where I think he's the strongest outside of the numbers, where he's got to angle the ball and drop it into a bucket is ugly, ugly, ugly. But I don't condone drafting Daniel Jones anywhere. I refuse to. Kelvin Harmon, I like, especially what he brings to the Patriots, because I think he's such a consummate high floor player. I think he's such a nice route runner at all three levels. I think he's a strong blocker. I think he's good with the ball in his hands. I think he's great adjusting to the football. I think he's physical. He just does so many things so well, so many little details of the wide receiver position, which is going to appeal to the Patriots for sure. I like him as that guy who's able to take that X role, because right now you look at Philip Dorsett, Julian Edelman as the starters. You don't have anybody taking press coverage on the outside. You kind of need a body who at least draws that top corner. I think Harmon can do that.
Yeah, I personally can't wait for the Patriots to pick Jeffrey Simmons with their first pick and then get J.J. Arcega-Whiteside later in the draft, and I'm just going to scream. Mark, thank you so much, man. That was awesome stuff on the Patriots. We always appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining the podcast.
All right, my friends. Have a fantastic weekend, guys.
Oh, man, it's going to be a fun draft week, Ben, but here we are. We're done. That's it. That's a wrap on the 2019 guest mock draft. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us the whole way. We really hope you enjoyed it. We enjoyed getting to talk to people who have a lot of different opinions and insight that we could never get ourselves, because like I said when we started this off, we can know tons of different draft prospects, but it's hard to know every team as well as a beat reporter does. So I've always enjoyed this exercise. I hope you guys enjoyed it as well. We will be back tomorrow. We're going to be talking pure overall draft stuff. It is going to be officially draft week, everybody. So until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.